Well, here we are again, Ray. It's the Renaissance, episode 161, Leonardo 49.
Yes.
Last episode, we talked about the whole aqueduct canal thing, Leonardo, right. Digging canals, digging tunnels, as we say.
Digging.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the theoretical aspect, this guy is kicking it. He is killing it. He has a problem. He designs something utterly brilliant, does it three or four times. Of course, those things don't get made. So it's probably frustrating for him, but the genius that is Leonardo, he might be peaking. I don't know. You can weigh in on that, but this guy is definitely hitting all cylinders when it comes to theory and design. It's the application that's causing him some problems.
Mm-hmm. One thing he's not good at, we know, is painting shit on walls. Give him a piece of walnut. No problem.
All day long, son.
A wall, not so much.
It's his nemesis.
Now, while he's dealing with the whole canal Pisa and he's inventing cranes for digging earth and he's trying to figure out how to divert rivers and create new rivers and all this kind of nonsense.
Swamps and marsh.
Artificial fucking
centrifuge,
whirlpools.
Three-walled
fortresses with artificial moats in between them. He also receives a commission to paint something in the Palazzo della Signoria, the great meeting place of the great council of Florence, the council hall, city hall, basically.
Right. Yeah, this is October 1503 that he gets the commission. So we have to play with the timeline a little bit because there's several different things going on kind of, roughly at the same time for a couple of years. But in October 1503, boom, he gets this commission. And it's a big deal. It is a big deal.
It's a big deal. And the scene that they want him to paint is the Battle of Anghiari. Now, I think we have mentioned this in one of our much, 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 much earlier episodes. Took place in June of 1440, the Battle of Anghiari between the forces of Milan and the League of some other Italian states led by Florence. It's part of the wars in Lombardy. Florence, great victory for Florence.
Yes, one of the few.
Yes.
To be honest.
And they haven't had a good victory in a long time. So,
if you have to reach back 60 years, 63 years, look, we want to paint something about a military victory. When was the last one? I think that was 1440. Okay, well, let's use that one. I mean, you do the best you can, right?
Yeah. So, they commissioned Leonardo to paint something, and they kind of envisioned, I think, something of very large scale, going on a big wall and a big building.
Yes.
They thought hundreds of thousands of guys all fighting. This is going to be magnificent.
It's going to be awesome.
I mean, again, keeping in mind that they didn't have movies back in those days, this is going to be their equivalent of, I don't know, what's the biggest battle scene? There's like, what was that, the Spielberg
Private Ryan, at the very beginning,
the opening of
very visceral, and they're picturing this massive mural, I think almost going all the way around. So it's going to be massive, and you could literally spend days, if this was completed, you could spend days walking up and down it and noticing different details. This was going to be it. This was going to be huge. This was going to be an accomplishment of epic proportions, not only for the government because they commissioned it, but also for the artists involved. This could be huge. And like you said at the end of the last episode, the ideas that Leo had for this, because of all of his experience and training and travel, this could have rivaled everything else that he did. This could have been his masterpiece if things had worked out.
Yeah. And it also shows us how esteemed he was in 1503 in Florence. He's
good
getting
point.
Major commissions for hydraulic engineering projects.
Yes.
They're sending him out to battle zones to figure out ways to help them win battles. And they're also commissioning probably the largest painting ever attempted, certainly the largest painting in Florence. Very ambitious projects on both an engineering side and a painting side. Like, he is living the dream right now.
I think they've maybe has it gotten to the point where Florence recognizes that he is literally a man for all seasons. He's a Renaissance man. He can do so much. And of all those things that he can do, he's actually the best at it. Mm. So this is Leonardo truly coming into his own, like you said, being recognized for his utter brilliance in so many fields of study.
Somebody actually called him a Renaissance man, and somebody else said, well, what's a Renaissance? And they said, I think that's what we're in the middle of. I think that's what I'm going to call it.
I feel like we're being rebirthed.
Yeah.
You know, that's the vibes that I'm getting.
Yeah, I'm all slimy. It's hot. I don't know where I am. I just cry a lot. I think
it's a tunnel. I don't know.
I talk about tunnels. It reminds me of the Foul Canal projects, and then I get sad.
Oh. I think of vaginas. Go ahead.
Now, the central scene Leonardo decided for this thing was going to be an extremely detailed close-up of four men.
Yes.
Locked in battle, riding four raging war horses over the possession of a standard. They're going to be fighting for
because that's what standard. You did.
That's what you did,
right?
As we know, going right back to the Roman times, that was your
right.
Apart from the head of your enemy or his shield, right. The standard was what you were fighting for.
Remember Augustus? Where are my eagles? Mm. You know, because they got lost. What was his name? Crassus?
No,
or was that a different one? That was a different one. Sorry, but yeah. So there was a was it out in the east? He had some men wiped down, and they took his eagles, and it took him quite some time to get it back. But, you know, it was a very big deal to take a standard, to take eagles. But we've gone on and on and on for, I guess, Varus. A year or however long.
Quintilius Varus.
What? Yes, there we go. Thank you very much. We've been going on about how one of the things that Leonardo instituted, started, whatever, is emotions on people's faces. And now you've got this battle scene. You've got this massive battle scene.
Can you show us those emotions, Ray? Show me the right.
This would be mine. No, I'm a pacifist.
For those of you who aren't watching this, you need to look. Watch our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can see Ray's faces. It's worth the price of admission, really.
But the emotions, not only on the men's faces and their bodies where they're contorted, but also the horses. But the point is, this is an emotional gold mine for Leonardo, and he is going to run with it. It's going to be utterly brilliant. This is him and his element.
Yeah. And it combines all of the things that he loves the most: naked men's bodies and horses.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Yes. Good horse lover me.
You know, he's been fascinated with horses. He loves drawing horses.
Oh, that's right. The big clay.
He was going to do the statue of Ludovico Sforza's father, which never got completed because the French invaded, etc. But he studied horses for decades, and he's never really had an opportunity yet to go full tilt on a horse painting or a statue or anything. And this is his big opportunity. Yeah.
Oh, this is it. Oh yeah. Horses. Sorry. Go ahead.
As we have suggested up until this point, he never finished it. So we don't even really have much in the way of drawings or studies of it in his notebooks. Couple of small things that, you know, people's faces, and he's got other horse studies in his notebooks. But what we do have is a copy of a copy of a copy, a bit like the Bible, Chinese Whispers version of it, painted by terrific later Renaissance artist Peter Paul Rubens, made around about 1603. So probably about 100 years after Leonardo. There's a copy of a copy that Rubens did, and it's amazing. It's in the Louvre in Paris. Is. It's known as the Battle of the Standard. Believed to be based on an engraving by Lorenzo Zacchia, which itself might have been a copy of a painting or a cartoon, a sketch by Leonardo.
Right.
But Leonardo was given the commission by the gonfaloniere Piero Sorini. The contract for it was signed by none other than Machiavelli himself.
Of course.
and it was going to decorate the hall of the Salone dei Cinquecento, the hall of the 500 in the Palazzo della Signoria, now known as the Palazzo Vecchio in Florence, for those of you that have been to Florence, which in Italian means the old palace. Vecchio means old, the old palace.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, to complicate matters.
Sure, why not?
The other wall, the opposite wall.
Right, and it's over 147, 174? I've got the numbers mixed up.
174-foot wall.
These are massive. Mm. And of course, the building does hold 500 people, so I guess it would be massive.
Mm-hmm. The opposing wall was the contractor paint on that was given to another artist by the name of Michelangelo Buonarroti.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him? No, he didn't do much. No. vanished sort of without a trace. He had he was 28 years old at the time, Michelangelo Buonarroti. Leonardo was 51. Michelangelo had just, in his spare time, knocked out a little thing he called the Statue of David. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but he saw a block of marble lying around. He said, anyone doing anything with that? And they're like, no, it's not good.
No.
It's a piece of shit.
It's your son.
Shitty.
It's your
piece of shit marble. He's like, mind if I have it? Nah, what the fuck can you do with
go
that?
Go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Go for it, go. Yeah.
Knocked out the Statue
of
David.
So he's got some skill. He's got a reputation. And he gets hired to do the other wall. Not bad.
Now, keep in mind that he's only 28. Leonardo was 30 when he went to Milan and had done nothing.
Yeah.
Really. Nobody wanted a bar of him. Nobody, you know, and he had to make up shit on his job application to Sforza.
Exactly.
Because he'd done really nothing apart from sketches in his notebooks and, you know, a couple of odd jobs that he usually didn't even finish.
Right. Do you think that Leo might have occasionally turned his head, looked across the room, and he went, you know, bitch. I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you all. But I don't know. I don't know if he was bitter or not. But
this is the only time that Leonardo and Michelangelo worked on the same project. And when I say worked, I'm doing air quotes.
Okay.
Because neither of them got very far on this project, as it turns out.
Don't hire either one of them if you have expectations.
Yeah.
If you just want to say you hired them, that's great. Mm. Yeah.
It's like hiring Ray to do something.
Yes.
I mean, go ahead, do it.
You do it for the glory, the fame, the notoriety, but don't expect anything. And I say that to Heather. Look, I'll take my clothes off and do this, but don't expect anything.
Lower your expectations.
and then find the basement mower them again. Mm.
That's what you've got on your business card. It's like Ray Harris. Lower your expectations.
I got a lot of business cards.
You do. Depending on the social setting, you need to pull out the right one.
Yeah, pull the right one. Let's see. Deadbeat, Bad Lover, Halfway Podcaster. No, that's all I got for now. I'll work on it, though.
Now, the scene that Michelangelo was commissioned to paint was something known as the Battle of Cascina. This had happened even earlier than, they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel when they're trying to come up with victories for Florence. This was back in 1364 near Cascina in modern-day Italy.
Oh, my God.
It was when they were trying to take control of Pisa. And they did. You know, they
for them.
Yeah. So you remember that time when we beat someone?
When your grandfather beat someone or whatever.
It was like 150 years earlier. It was a lot older than their grandfather.
Great
grandfather. Yeah, yeah.
But the point is they're going to celebrate their, and I'm just air quotes, military victories. So good for them. And they got, they can pay these guys.
Yeah. I think we briefly mentioned the Battle of Cascina too, because it was the British mercenary John Hawkwood who was leading the Pisan forces.
Right.
Anyway.
Oh, that's right.
So the scene that Michelangelo was going to depict was a group of bathing soldiers getting surprised by the enemy. They're like naked.
Shouldn't Leonardo paint that one?
I think this was another source of the enmity between them as Leonard goes, oh, dicks, I'm the guy that should paint dicks and the butts. Dicks. I'm the dick and butt guy.
Dick master.
Michelangelo says, excuse me, have you seen the statue I just knocked out? Amazing butt. Have you seen his butt cheeks?
Oh,
you
could crack
walnuts between those fucking bat cheeks.
Security asked me to leave, but I brought a walnut to Italy just for that purpose.
Now, Michelangelo, the reason he didn't finish the project was he wasn't in Florence long enough. He did his preparatory drawing, his cartoon, but then he got invited back to Rome in 1505 by Pope Julie II.
Can't say no to the Pope.
He said, listen, rumor has it I might die one day. I need a tomb. Will you build me a tomb? So he was like, oh, fuck. All right. He said to the Florentines, listen, I'll be right back. Don't stop anything.
I gotta go
anything.
Make a death box. Right. Yeah. I'll be back. Hmm. Just leave my stuff right here next to the wall. I'll be back.
Now, the interesting thing, getting back to Leonardo, is they want him to paint this military victory. But of course, we know that this is post Borgia Leonardo, and his views on war have changed dramatically over time because he's seen firsthand the brutalities of war, and he's got I wouldn't say he's totally disgusted by it, but he's sort of he's like us, like he's kind of fascinated by war,
sickened but fascinated.
Yeah, we talk about war all the time.
Right.
We talk about war all the time, but we're total pacifist tippy cowards. So we don't want to be in one, right?
Yes. Yeah. No one runs faster than Ray from a war. I'm just putting that out there right now. Yeah, no, total pacifist.
Another one of your business cards. Leonardo.
Sure, get that written up. Go ahead.
At one point in his notebooks, he called war a most beastly madness.
Yes.
So he in his preparatory drawings, what we have of them, we and with the copy that we've got from Rubens, he seems to be trying to balance, if it is in fact, you know, accurate, which historians seem to think it is.
Right.
He seems to be trying to balance the thrill and excitement of conflict with the horrors of the war. So it's not going to be a celebratory painting,
right?
But it's also not going to be Guernica by Picasso, just all about the horrors of war. It sits somewhere in the middle, and of course, you know, his employers, the Signoria, wants the painting to celebrate Florence's great victory. Yeah. So he needs to fulfill the commission. As much as we know, Leonardo likes to tell his employers to go fuck themselves. I'm going to do it the way I'm going to do it. And if you don't like it, you can just fuck off. Go find another painter as good as
brilliant.
Me. And they went,
oh, you can't. Oh.
Michelangelo. He's like, fuck.
But you made a good point. What he's going to paint, what he's going to try to convey is going to represent his own very complex feelings about war. So he's going to mirror that. And you're right. He's going to get detailed notes about the events of the battle, and he's going, no, fuck that. I'm going to focus on the standard, and then I'll do a whole bunch of guys fighting or whatever. But I know what I want the centerpiece to be. I'm the artist. Go fuck yourself. But again, you're right. I think it's going to, when you look at it, you're going to go, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's horrible. That guy just died. And it's just going to be all over the place. But that's what war is. It is all over the place. It is messy. There could be moments of courage and bravery and self-sacrifice, but it's a gruesome business. And I think he really wanted to convey that to whatever degree he could on this wall and get away with it at the same time.
Mm. So I don't know if you have the Rubens picture
handy. I do. Yeah.
I think we should.
Amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. It almost looks like a marble relief. It looks like a carving. It's black and white or
that detailed.
Ochre and white, I guess. It's a drawing. Looks like it's on a book here. It's on an opened out couple of pages on a book. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys I can see in this drawing.
Right.
1, 2, 3 horses.
But you have to look really close because it's so packed with detail. You have to focus. It's amazing.
Yeah, so, and we've talked in previous episodes about Leonardo's fascination with bodies in movement. He is really pushing the boundaries in his works, particularly at this age, of limbs twisting, turning. He wants to convey movement. He wants to convey emotion. He wants slashing. To convey thought, depth. Yeah, he wants to get the viewers engaged in the painting by really being able to convey the energy of what's going on. And this is, you know, probably the best opportunity he's ever had to do that. This isn't a portrait of one of Sforza's mistresses holding a ferret. this is, or you know, Virgin Mary and a baby with a finger up her butt or whatever. Yeah. This is probably, like, I imagine he was thrilled with the opportunity to do this, because this is taking all of these things that he's been studying in terms of conveying all this. Yeah, brings it all into one place. And it's going to be in the most, probably one of the most esteemed locations in Florence. I don't know if the general public got to go into the Council of 500, but the elite did. So he's thinking, like, for evermore, for generations, the elite of Florence will be looking at this masterpiece that I did, that will, you know, break new ground in painting.
Yes.
No one's ever been able to do anything like this with this degree of skill before.
Yeah. No, just real quick, and I apologize. You're right. Probably only the elites got to see it, because you don't let the riffraff into the government building. I think we've all learned a lesson from January 6th. But could you picture being an uneducated, illiterate peasant in Florence, and all you do is, you remember when we talked about the wool industry, and there was like 13 steps to it or whatever the hell it was, and each one was specialized and each one had their own union? Could you picture being just one of those guys, and you do some little tiny part of the wool trade, and somehow you were able to walk in and look at this? I mean, people, with all due respect, like that would probably never ever be able to see anything like this or comprehend it. I mean, I imagine it would have shocked their senses, but that's what Leo was going for. Like you said, with all the emotion and motion, it would have been staggering to them. But I just imagine the average person seeing this, if it had been done in all of its glory, it would have been talked about for centuries. And I think that's what Leo was going for. That's certainly what the Signoria was going for.
Yeah, but it's also interesting to think about the impact that it might have had on the way that the Florentines thought about war. Like, we know in 20th century history, you go back early part of the 20th century, World War One, World War Two, whenever governments wanted to convince the populace to go and fight, you know, it was all about glory and honor, and men were naive, gullible, and stupid enough to go, yes, I shall go and defend my nation. What? Why are we going to fight? Well, they killed the Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Why do I care? Well, just because glory, honor.
Right.
We can't, you know, let them get away with that. Oh, right. Yes.
Right. And there's a reason why the uniforms look, the dress uniforms look as spiffy as they do, because when you get a 22-year-old Marine walking into a high school to try to recruit others, I mean, he's immaculate. The girls fawn over him. Just like you said, we are programmed to think pretty much good, glorious, courageous, admiring things about soldiers. And yeah, that's what the governments do. They lie to you. And this could easily do that. This could convince the Signoria, oh my God, we kicked ass over there. Maybe we should be more militant. Who knows what effects it would have had, but it certainly put a positive spin on killing a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah, but I was going in the other direction
with
this.
Sorry.
I was going to say, what happened in the second half of the 20th century, Vietnam War, the media started to cover the brutality of war, the other side of it. You saw villages getting napalmed. You saw, the
rape, killing civilians, everything.
Yeah. The famous thing of a Viet Cong prisoner being shot in the head. You started to see that other side of war, and people started to go, oh, shit, okay.
War is bad.
Yeah, war is bad. War is violent. Oh, shit. Why didn't somebody tell us that? And I'm wondering if Leonardo's painting had gone ahead, if people would have looked at it and gone, "Oh shit, that looks."
I don't want to be
in the middle of that. Fuck.
Is that a sword in his eye? Did that horse just step on his crotch? I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking at Rubens' drawing, because this is the only thing we've really got, as I said, seven guys, three horses, all of the men. So on the far left, you've got a guy on his hands and knees with a shield cover. He's got it holding a shield sort of behind his left shoulder. Right above him, there's another guy on a horse. Hard for me to really tell who's on whose side here.
Yeah, they all look the same.
But I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be underneath a horse that's about to trample me.
That's bad. That's
now
bad.
The guy above him. This is quite amazing. His suit of armor is like something out of I don't know, ancient Greek mythology.
Yes.
His helmet looks like a large seashell.
Yes, Aquaman loaned him that.
Yeah. Plus, he has a seashell like on his
shoulder.
Yeah, his left shoulder.
Yeah.
Shoulder pad. Yeah, I think that's technically what it's called, a shoulder pad. It's like an amazing seashell.
Lots of detail.
Incredible detail. Then he's got like a ram's head.
His chest.
And his chest plate with
chains. But it blocks the blows.
Coming from it, yeah.
Yeah, definitely the chains. Why chains?
He's well to hold his dick in place. I don't know. You know, he's got a sword strapped to his side, but he's holding a lance, which is sort of being driven into the mouth by of one of the horses behind him. By the looks of it, oh, there's a fourth horse. There's another horse's head I'd missed before. Oh, so there's four horses.
Dang, that's too many. But he's doing a cool behind his back move.
Yeah.
With the javelin. That's badassery there, if I may. That's pretty badass.
Now, another couple of guys behind him are also gripping his lance. They're wrestling over the control of the lance.
Right.
Can't see his horse's head. It must be behind his body. The guy to his left, our right, holding his cutlass, also got a, well, actually more of a sort of normal suit of armor, wearing a fancy hat that he's just come from the races, Melbourne Cup Day. But the looks on his face and the other guy's faces, they almost look to me like Japanese masks. Japanese opera kabuki masks.
Right.
Yeah, they look like kabuki masks. Exactly.
Yes.
Very intense. Snarls, grimaces, their eyes.
Eyebrows or furrow or whatever. It's scary. It's very intimidating, very scary looking.
So
no one's having a good time.
Another three guys there on horses. All the horses obviously have distorted looks on their faces. The horses almost look like they're wrestling. They're all intertwined, their limbs.
Yes.
Yeah. The guys are all snarling and trying to stab the fuck out of each other. And the horses have these magnificent manes of hair that are flowing behind them.
And muscular and perfect.
But underneath those horses, there is another two guys wrestling on the ground. One has grabbed the other by the hair, is pulling his head backwards. He's either going to cut his throat, stab him, or fuck him. I'm not sure.
or all of the above.
All three in any order.
But they're both about to be landed on by at least two horses, so I don't think either one of them are going to end well on this day.
Yeah. If people haven't seen this, I highly recommend checking it out. It's an amazing drawing, and if it is an accurate depiction of Leonardo, then, again, would have been completely amazing.
Yes. And it would have been 174 feet of this detail. So, it would have, like I said, it would have taken people days to walk up and down and to study everything. So this was ambitious. And again, this could have rivaled any and everything that Leo had done.
Now, this is a long time before Michelangelo does the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. But it's kind of in that direction. Like, it's going to be this massive mural.
Jumble. Exactly.
His on one side, Leonardo's on the other side. Now, Leonardo had been writing in his notebooks for at least a decade about how to depict a right. battle scene like this. He had yeah. talked about the colors of the dust and the smoke getting kicked up by the men and the horses. He wrote, "First, you must represent the smoke of artillery mingling in the air with the dust tossed up by the movement of horses and the combatants. The finest part of the dust rises highest. Hence, that part will be least visible and will look almost the same color as the air. At the top, right. where the smoke is more separate from the dust, the smoke will assume a bluish tinge." When he was talking about the dust kicked up by the horses, he wrote, "Make the little clouds of dust distant from each other in proportion to the strides made by the galloping horses, and the clouds wow. which are furthest removed from the horses should be least visible. Make them high and spreading and thin, and the nearer ones will be more conspicuous and smaller and denser." When he was talking about the brutality of battle, he wrote, "If you show a man who has fallen to the ground, show the place where he has been dragged as bloody mud. A horse right. will drag the body of its dead rider, leaving traces of the corpse's blood in the dust and mud. Make the vanquished look pale and panic-stricken, their eyebrows raised high or knitted in grief, their faces stricken with painful lines." So he's... like, he's really thought, well before he even gets his commission, very deeply years. About yes. how he's going to execute yes. a painting like yeah. this. He also wrote, "You must make the dead covered with dust, which is changed into crimson mire where it is mingled with the blood issuing in a stream from the corpse. The dying right. will be grinding their teeth, their eyeballs rolling heavenward as they beat their bodies with their fists and twist their limbs. Some might be shown disarmed and beaten down by the enemy, turning upon the foe to take on an inhuman and bitter revenge with teeth and nails. Some maimed warrior may be seen fallen to the earth, covering himself with his shield, while the enemy bending over him tries to deal him a deadly blow," which is exactly what we just saw in the Rubens drawing.
Right.
"There must not be a level spot that is not trampled and saturated with blood."
Dang. Okay, Mr. Horror Movie Guy. But you're right. Everything that he's ever done when it comes to painting and observing nature and everything else, all of that is coming together in this painting. And if that copy is representative of his work, that is why it is truly magnificent. It stirs your emotions. And that's exactly what he was going for. This is literally the equivalent of a movie in 1504, the yeah. big screen. That Indeed. Was incredible. Yeah.
Now, unlike your reputation for lovemaking, Leonardo's reputation for painting, as we know, is that he's very slow.
Right. Oh, I've been called slow, but that's just in general.
It's just not in general. Yeah, it's not about your lovemaking. No, it's just, yeah. That's another one of your business cards. Ray Harris, I'm slow. Just written under.
Just slow in general. Just slow in general. Where were we?
He's so slow, in fact, that one month he goes to collect his payment from the council and they paid it to him in pennies as a protest for the fact that he hasn't been making enough progress. And he actually refuses to accept payment in pennies. He says, I'm not a penny painter.
Right.
I'm well beyond getting paid in pennies, bitch.
Right.
And he was so insulted that he actually tried to borrow money from friends so he could buy himself out of his contract.
Yes, yes. Well, they did have in the contract they wanted it done by a certain time, and it doesn't look like he's going to reach it. So, yeah, he's literally like, I'm going to buy my way out of this. Fuck you, and fuck the horses that I painted on the wall. I'm out. But the Gonfaloniere, Piero Soderini, calms him down, talks to him, and brings him back to the project. But again, this is Leonardo. This is a 170-foot wall. You can't rush genius. That's what I've been telling everybody. And then they snicker. But the point is, they're getting frustrated, and he's getting frustrated too.
I know how they feel. So they sign a new contract.
Thank God. It's
actually signed by Leonardo and witnessed by Machiavelli in May 1504. Oh, yeah, all the time.
But
now, this contract specifies that if he doesn't finish or if he's too slow, he's going to have to repay all of his fees. And forfeit all the work he'd done if he's not finished by February 1505. The document actually says the following. Several months ago, Leonardo, son of Ser Piero da Vinci and a Florentine citizen, undertook to do a painting for the Sala del Consiglio Grande, and seeing that this painting has already been begun as a cartoon by the said Leonardo, he moreover, having received on such account 35 florins and desiring that the work be concluded as soon as possible, the Signoria have resolved that Leonardo da Vinci is to have completely finished painting and brought it wholly to perfection by the end of next February without quibble or objection. Now, I don't know, quibbles, that's my favorite episode of the classic Star Trek series is the quibble episode. I don't know what they've got. The problem with quibbles is... You get them wet and they'll turn on you. Don't feed them after midnight and don't get them wet. That's the only thing you need to remember about quibbles.
And don't anybody call you a quibble lover because that can get taken out of context.
Fighting words.
Sorry.
In the event that Leonardo shall not have finished in the stipulated time, then Signoria can compel him by whatever means appropriate to repay all the money received in connection with this work. And Leonardo would be obliged to make over to the said Signoria as much as had been done.
They're frustrated.
The guy's got a reputation of being a genius. He's getting hydraulic engineering projects, which don't work out. He's getting painting commissions, which he's too slow to do. But he's got this reputation of being a bit flaky. Right. He's a bit ADHD, Leonardo.
Take some pills, right?
Starts a lot of things. Yeah, I mean, imagine that. Imagine if you can put him on some Adderall. What he could have done with some Adderall.
We'd all have flying cars right now. We would all have flying cars right now.
Yeah.
Based off solar power alone.
Yeah.
Or garbage. Yeah. But no. But Mother Nature giveth and Mother Nature taketh away. He's brilliant, but he's not disciplined, focused, and all that. And plus, he shouldn't have to deal with these cunts. But they're the ones in charge, and they've got the money. And we've already said this a billion times. The artists go where the money is, and he's got to deal with them.
That's the plot of my next film is I just jump in a time machine and go back and give Leonardo da Vinci Adderall.
And then you come back.
Then come back. Yeah.
And everybody's got time machines. It's like an iPhone time machine. It's just no big deal. It's no big deal.
Well, and then I go back and take it back off him because I don't want other people to have time machines. Fuck them.
Right. But
where's the fun in a time machine if everyone has a time machine and they can go back and change
everybody. Fuck everybody else. I concur.
I trust myself to go back and change history.
Right.
But I don't trust anybody else to go back and do that. No.
Morons. No.
Yeah. Fuck me. Yeah.
So he's done some preparatory drawings. Planned this out. Go ahead.
Some guy on my TikTok channel posting my Messiah stuff.
I love that. It's really starting to take off. You're getting some big good numbers. Go ahead. Sorry.
He posted today, the Romans and Hebrews were very good historians. Jesus definitely existed. And I said, but unfortunately, neither the Romans or the historians left a single contemporary account of him. And he said, you should learn. He replied back, you should learn some facts before you open your pinhole, dumbass. And he posted a link to some website talking about the sources. And I said, I replied back, before you start calling people's names, very Christian of you too, by the way, you might want to look up the word contemporary in the dictionary because, of course, anything written about him appeared decades, generations later.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was like, God love Christians. Mouthy fucking Christians.
Hopefully God loves them because no one else does.
So we've already talked in the past about Leonardo's Last Supper and how – He didn't want to paint quickly on wet plaster as you had to do to paint a mural on a wall.
Exactly.
So he invented a new technique for the Last Supper, which even at this stage had started to fall off the wall.
Right. Flaking.
So it doesn't stop him, though. He's not like, oh, well, I better do it the old-fashioned way. He's not going to go back to using wheelbarrows to cart dirt up hills, Leonardo. That's not our Leonardo.
Move forward, not backwards.
Yeah, exactly. So
he experiments. But... Like I think, and I won't go too far, but almost like the Marsh thing, his theories are, again, ahead of his time and ahead of what is available to him at this time in this country or in this city.
Yeah. So this time he treats the plaster wall with what he called Greek pitch. I know you've been up in a few Greek pitches in your time. Or was that Greek bitches? I don't know. One of the two. But pitch greca per la pictura. Probably, historians think, a combination of turpentine or resin and wax. It's something dark. Right. He's going to paint that up on the wall.
It's sticky. It should work, right?
He's going to paint on top of that, but he notices almost immediately he did some small scale tests and they seem to work okay. As soon as he starts putting it on the wall, doesn't work. The paints aren't sticking. And... Right. One early biographer of Leonardo actually came to the conclusion that he was cheated by his supplier when he started buying it in bulk.
Right.
And that the linseed oil that he was using for his paints was faulty, wasn't good linseed oil. He got ripped off. He bought it from Barry, the hydraulic engineer, who was cutting costs on that project, and he's cutting costs on this project as well.
Barry's like, I'm making money hand over fist from these suckers. If I could, real quick, the February 1505 deadline comes and goes, and he's not done. But he is working. He is working. So I think they cut him some slack because they see him diligently applying himself. Does that sound right?
Yeah, diligently trying to fix the shit that's not working anyway. So to try and dry the paints faster... He actually builds a series of coal fires that hang near the wall that he can direct at the heat at the wall. But the paint drips on the fires. It's just not.
It's not.
It's just not going to work. And,
not copacetic.
Yeah. You know, Leonardo being Leonardo, he's like, all right, I'm going to have to go away and think about this. I need to come up with a new technique. I mean, I don't know how to do paint on wall. You know, it's something I've got to figure out. Giorgio Vasari, who saw the unfinished version of the painting, described it thusly. Mm-hmm. An old soldier in a red cap crying out grips the staff with one hand and raising a scimitar with the other, furiously aims a blow to cut off both the hands of those who, gnashing their teeth in the struggle, are striving an utmost fierceness to defend their banner. On the ground between the legs of the horses, there are two figures that are fighting together, and the one on the ground has over him a soldier who has raised his arm as high as possible, that thus with greater force he may plunge a dagger into his throat in order to end his life, while the other, struggling with his legs and arms, is doing what he can to escape death. It is not possible to describe the invention that Leonardo showed in the garments of the soldiers, all varied by him in different ways, and likewise in the helmet crests and other ornaments, not to mention the incredible mastery that he displayed in the forms and lineaments of the horses, which Leonardo, with their fiery spirit, muscles, and shapely beauty, drew better than any other master.
Wow. See, if I had drawn this, one, stick figures. Two, everybody would look exactly the same because I can only do one shirt, one face, one expression, and my horses would all look like large dogs. But he is able to individualize these people. And again, that makes it more engrossing. That makes it more realistic because obviously we all don't look or go around looking the same and dressing the same. So again, Vasari is so lucky he got to see this before June came.
Well, Vasari got a really good look at it because he ended up getting the commission to paint over the top of it.
Oh, fuck. Right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Vasari was commissioned to, do new paintings on the walls because neither Michelangelo or Leonardo finished theirs. There is a theory that Vasari did with these paintings what he did with one of Masaccio's paintings, where he was employed also to cover up one of Masaccio's. Remember, Masaccio's the guy who pretty much invented perspective. And what he did, we later learned, was he covered it up. He put a fake wall over it. He couldn't destroy it. He goes, this is a masterpiece. It's on a wall.
That's right.
I can't take it down. I can't cover it up because that would be heresy. So he put a fake wall over it and painted on the fake wall.
Nice.
And it was later discovered. Mm-hmm. There is a theory that he did the same with Leonardo's painting.
Oh, wow.
A few years ago, an Italian art historian, researcher, was trying to make the case for this, and he ended up drilling holes into Vasari's painting to see what was behind it, and he came out with some paint that was behind there, some pigments, and so he wanted to get funding from the government of Florence or the government of Italy to continue his exploration. People were up in arms, though, about the fact that he'd drill holes into the Vasari.
Yeah.
And a lot of historians said, no, there's no evidence. Vasari left no indication that he covered it up.
Right.
Well, covered it up in a way where it could be retrieved.
Yeah.
So nothing has happened. This is, I think, about 10 years ago. Nothing's happened, but there is... you know, one guy at least has this theory that it's still there somewhere. It's probably all fallen off the wall by now, knowing Leonardo, but there might be some remnants of it there. And they would need to get in, you know, X-ray scanning technology and all this kind of shit. But
is there hidden, enough to save?
There might be that and Jesus's foreskin. I mean, that may still be back there somewhere.
Actually, if I could bring those two together, I think I'm right on this. You can ask some biblical scholars, but if you take Jesus's foreskin and you rub it on the wall, I think the original painting would come out. I think. I'm willing to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The foreskin magic. Please
like
continue.
Lemon skin on invisible ink or lemon juice on invisible ink. Yeah.
Exactly.
So Leonardo didn't finish, Michelangelo didn't finish, and of course, one of the things that, I mean, Leonardo didn't want to finish, A, because he hadn't figured out his new technique for painting murals.
Right.
Secondly, he got distracted by another project that we'll talk about. Thirdly, he probably didn't like the fact that this young punk, Michelangelo Buonarroti, was looking over his shoulder and ripping off his good ideas. So. Right. We're not going to go into detail of Michelangelo's life. Well, let's finish our 400 episodes of Leonardo first, and then we'll get on to Michelangelo probably next. But
by 2024, I feel confident.
Really? Wow, that's
ambitious.
Trying to dig a canal around Pisa there, my friend. That is the end of episode 161. Until next time.